Today on Maine Calling, the state's love affair with basketball. Accounts of the first basketball game in Maine date back to the beginning of the last century, and many alive today might recall the heyday of the 1970s, when local gyms were filled to the rafters on Friday nights. As high school playoff time approaches, we'll explore what makes basketball in Maine so special. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on the program we'll hear from veteran observers of the sport about the long-established basketball culture in our state, the impact of Maine phenom Cooper Flagg's success, and which high school teams and players to watch for this year. We'll also hear from a Maine Public producer about what it takes to pull off our annual coverage of the tournament games for television. And as always, we want to hear from you. Maine Calling is next.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Highland Green, an active 55-plus lifestyle community with a 230-acre nature preserve, highlandgreenlifestyle.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. There's something about high school basketball in Maine that brings communities together. Yeah. And as tournament season approaches, we'll talk today about what makes this sport so special to Mainers. Joining us for the hour, Bill Green, former host of Bill Green's Maine and the Green Outdoors, a former reporter, anchor, and executive producer with News Center Maine for more than 47 years. Is that number correct? We'll have to do a fact check on that. Peter Murray is a coach and former English teacher at Dexter Regional High School. He's the current president of the Maine Association of Basketball Coaches. And Lucas McNally is with us. He's a filmmaker, writer, self-proclaimed basketball data nerd. He runs the website MaineBasketballRankings.com. We invite you to join the conversation. Did you play basketball in high school? Do you have a favorite memory from either playing the game or watching one? Who are the players you think are we should watch this season? You can give us a call. The number is 1-800-399-3566, or send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, or post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. Bill Green, 47 years, is that accurate?
Well, I was a studio cameraman for 3, and then a sportscaster for 18, and then a feature reporter for 6 or 7, and then I did Bill Green's Maine for 20. So what it adds up to 47 years and 8 months or something, yeah. Keith.
Okay, so you got behind a camera at the age of 9 then, I guess.
18.
it was legal. So the premise of the show, Bill, as you know, is that Maine has, I guess you could call it, an ongoing love affair with basketball. Is that premise fair? And if so, why is that, do you think?
I don't know, because except for Cooper, maybe we haven't played it at that elite level. But it's something about breaking up the winter, the big event, coming into town to shop and see your high school team play. And it's more than 100 years of tradition. And it's a sort of a rite of passage for those on the floor, I think.
So obviously everybody loves football. Maine has also produced some great baseball players, as we know, through the years. And soccer is this emergent sport that every kid seems to be playing. But there is this thing about basketball that that seems to, I don't know, have, maybe it has more memories than other sports. I'm not sure. There was a heyday in the 70s. People always have a basketball story.
I think that's exactly right. You know, you're a little kid and you go down, you stand on the edge of the court, and then you see a guy like Gabby Price, in my case, playing basketball. Or, you know, some of those guys that came out, Peter Kelly was out of Caribou, and, you know, Jock McKernan scored 1,000 points at Bangor. These guys were guys that you looked up to. And early in my reporting days, girls tournaments started. And we got to see, you know, equity in the sense of if you give somebody a chance like they gave the girls in the 70s, you quickly saw them, you know, rise up and excel. And and become as exciting as the boys' games. So it's just, I don't know, it's something about growth and coming of age in Maine. The tournament is part of it.
Peter Murray, I'll ask the same question of you. You wear a number of hats, as we mentioned at the top, but you coached for quite a few years, for some three decades, I guess, in Dexter. Let me ask the same question for you. What is it that basketball and these teams have meant for that community over the years?
Well, I mean, I think Bill, you know, hit the nail on the head in the sense that it's the longest season of the high school sports seasons. It's the one that encompasses almost 4 months of the year. And much like this year, it's been, four cold months. And, you know, if you're into ice fishing or snowshoeing or snowmobiling, you know, you're going to find yourself outside trying to do those activities. But where would you rather be than in a high school gym watching a high school basketball game? And I think that's, that long season is really one of the driving forces behind why the sport is so popular. I also think that, the spotlight is pretty bright in a gym. Sometimes on a soccer field or on a football field, a player can kind of get lost in the crowd. But in basketball, where there's only five out there for each team, I mean, it's a pretty bright spotlight for everybody involved. Crowds are pretty close to the court. So it's an emotional roller coaster, and you know, with kids involved, I mean, parents are gonna be that way about it. So I think that you put all that together, and it makes for a great magical atmosphere, and that's really why the basketball tradition is passed down one generation to the next.
And there's a lot of, I think maybe this is true everywhere, but maybe so more so in the Northeast, where in some parts of the country, you know, the county is the king. Here, it's the very town-oriented. There's long histories of individual towns. And there seems to be, like, a lot of pride about being from a particular town. And this is kind of a way to wear the colors and represent the town and kind of, I guess, for bragging rights. Is that also sort of a factor? I mean, it becomes much bigger than a sport in some ways.
Well, I would agree with you 100%. I mean, I know that, I graduated from Skank High School in East Millinocket back in the day. And, you know, wearing the Kelly green is, I still wear it with pride. And I can't wait to tell people that's where I went to high school. Very proud of that myself. And then I landed in Dexter. And Dexter, over the years in the tournament venues, is well known for their sea of red. The whole side of a gymnasium filled with people wearing red, showing their support for the team. So very much so. There's a lot of pride.
Lucas, we'll bring you in here. You're a stats guy, as you self-confess. You haven't been doing this quite as long as these other two have, but maybe a decade or so. And you got into this by sort of as a favor to your brother, who was a coach who needed a statistician.
Yeah, I don't know if he needed a statistician as much as he needed me to stop yelling at the refs so much. So he asked me if I would, do his stats for him on an iPad. And I was like, yeah, that sounds fun. And so I started doing that. And just distract me, just give him a shiny toy, shut him up. And just the way my brain works, I just kept adding stuff to it. And I'm like, well, let's do true shooting percentage. And he's like, oh, okay, sure, great, go ahead. And then it just sort of built out from that. And then you get people arguing about who's the better team. And I'm like, well, that's a math problem. And here we are.
Yeah. So in your time on the sidelines here, what's your take about, I guess what we've been talking about so far, that is this sort of love affair with the game and the importance of it, particularly in the long winter months, to these communities?
Yeah. I mean, like Peter was saying, with the spotlight, it's louder in a gym than it is on a soccer field. And you get all those people in there and you get the crowds, and it's just the atmosphere can't compete. And, what better value are you going to get for your dollar than to pay $4 to see a JV game and a varsity game? And then maybe one of them goes overtime and the place is going nuts. Like, you can't beat that dollar per, entertainment value anywhere. And so, what else are you going to do in the winter than go to a basketball game against your heated rivals when you're battling for a playoff spot?
Yeah, I noticed when we'll talk about the tournaments on television a little bit later in the program, but I noticed that If a game is on and I'll just start watching it, I can't pull myself away. And you know, one game leads to another one. Pretty soon, you've killed killed the whole afternoon there. But
you've improved your afternoon, is what you've done.
So sorry. Yes, that's what I meant. Any of you can chime in on this. Go ahead.
I think I'm addicted to sports for just exactly the reason you said. I'll tune in and Dexter's playing Skank, and I don't have a dog in that fight. And all of a sudden, for some reason, I want Dexter to upset those Skank teams because I remember how good, you know, and I'm just sitting home by myself and it's thrilling to watch. You know, it's just, I don't know what it is about that. It's something in my makeup, you know, and I think it's kind of like an addiction. And especially when you know a little bit about the history of the teams and the fun and how important it is to the athletes. You know, I mean, some of these guys making, you know, millions of dollars this weekend on Sunday at the Super Bowl, you know, that's not the same as what we can be seeing on the various parquets around the state of Maine. And it's just, I think maybe that's part of it. But I just love all of the things that you're talking about, the community pride, the sense of this is our shot, the history that goes into this. You know, so-and-so's father and grandfather or grandmother now played. It's all so exciting.
Yeah, there are great backstories and the Cinderella story everyone likes. Any of you can jump in on this question. I wonder why there are some communities, some towns, some schools that seem to just generate good teams year after year. You know, I think of in the smaller, more remote schools. You know, Valley in Bingham. Central Aroostook, you know, Jonesport Beals for years when I was growing up here, always seemed to have a team. Is that because there's a culture in the town, a history? Is it because of a single coach that's been there a long time? I'm just curious what your take is on why some towns seem to have a tradition that lasts for long stretches.
I would say that for all of the reasons you just gave, you know, one thing that we see the dynamics in coaching in Maine now is that it's becoming rarer and rarer for a single coach to stay in one town for a long, long period of time. That used to be a regular occurrence, and now it happens a little bit less. I'm always curious when I see teams, modern teams this year, and the family names are the same. You know, you recognize those names from that town. So you know that there's an uncle or a father or a grandfather, grandmother, an aunt, somebody that's played on those teams prior to that. And I think that the communities are tremendously supportive of these teams. There's a lot of things that go on behind the scenes before teams ever get to the floor, particularly during tournament week. There's a lot of dinners going on. There's a lot of rallies that are being held. Those are community events. The entire community is taking pride in the fact that they're participating in the tournament.
And a lot of it is the youth program. If you've got a strong youth program, and that involves a lot of people whose names you'll never hear, who are volunteering to coach third graders and fourth graders and get those numbers out. And then if the varsity coach is like keyed in with the youth program, that's, I think, a lot of times, and Peter knows better than me, I think that's a lot of times what sustains success, because you've got a next wave of people coming all the time. You're not just waiting for your next 1,000-point scorer to magically show up as a freshman.
Well, and we have a saying here in Dexter that, you know, tradition never graduates. So you just reload each year with exactly what Lucas is saying. You know, he's left a tremendous amount of time. I put in a lot of time with kindergarten kids and first graders and have great fun with that. Now, could I do that a full-time job as a kindergarten teacher? God bless those people, because, you know, I can last about an hour and that's about it. But Peter, it's that kind of building block that really leads to the varsity teams that we see on TV.
Peter, we all like to kind of criticize refs and coaches. What's it like to lead a team from a small Maine town into the tournament? Do you feel pressure from the community? You're the colonel, you're the general, here we go.
Well, I mean, I guess there's probably is some level of pressure there, but I don't know that I felt the community pressure per se. I think that I felt more that they were pulling for us. you know, that they wanted to support us. They weren't like saying, you better get to the tournament or else. It wasn't like that. It was more of a, well, how can we help you get make this team better and make this experience better? So I always felt tremendous support here in Dexter. You know, I could count myself blessed that, you know, I coached where I did and had the experience that I had.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is Maine Calling.
And this is Maine Calling here on listener-supported Maine Public Radio and day two of our winter fundraiser. Good morning. My name's Nicole Ogrisco. I'm a reporter and host here, and I'm with my colleague Lucy. Hey, Lucy.
Hey, Nicole. My name's Lucy Santerre, and I'm just so excited to be here. It is the winter fundraiser, and I love joining the fundraiser during Maine Calling because it's just one of our most, you know, special shows. And so if or any of our other programs are something that stand out to you as, you know, valuable, as something that, you know, makes your day better and informs you, give us a call at 1-800-866-1475. That's our pledge line, not to be confused with the Maine Calling line. It's 1-800-866-1475. And when you call us, one of our lovely volunteers will be on the line waiting for you, where you can donate at a level that is perfect for you and your budget.
1-800-866-1475 is that phone number. You can also go to mainepublic.org/donate. And Lucy, you said it. I mean, I think Maine Calling is really a reflection of what we do here at Maine Public Radio. It brings people together from all over the state to talk about a particular topic. And this topic is, you know, especially it's special to a lot of our listeners, to those that we have on the program today. And the programs are really only coming to you. They're only made possible because of your support. That's why we're asking you to call this morning, 1-800-866-1475.
You can also visit us at mainepublic.org/donate. It's really easy right there. And like Nicole said, people support us from all across the state, including Charles from Portland, Marianne from Cushing, Patricia from Augusta, Carl from Harpswell, and Joanne from Addison. Thank you to everyone across the state. As I've been tuning in today, my heart has just been warmed thinking of how much support Maine Public has across the state. And if you are someone who's listened to Maine Public Radio or watched Maine Public Television and you haven't donated yet, we love you too, and we're thinking of you. What are you waiting for? Give us a call at 1-800-866-1475 today.
And a special opportunity today, especially for those who have never donated before to Maine Public. Lucy, you said it. What are you waiting for? When you donate to Maine Public for the first time, you'll be automatically entered to win one of six pairs of tickets to the sold-out performance of Hidden Brain. It's coming to Portland on Friday, April 3rd. Again, those tickets are a possibility for you when you donate for the first time today. 1-800-866-1475 or at mainepublic.org.
We really would love to hear from you. The community of Maine Public supporters is so strong, and you can be part of what makes everything that we do possible, just like Maine Calling. Call us at 1-800-866-1475 or visit us at mainepublic.org/donate.
And thanks for your support.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. We're talking about high school basketball today. My guests are Bill Green, former host of Bill Green's Maine, Lucas McNelly, he runs MaineBasketballRankings.com, and Peter Murray, president of the Maine Association of Basketball Coaches. And we invite you, as always, to join the conversation. Did you play high school basketball? Were you in the stands? Share one of your memories. Email us, talk@mainepublic.org, or comment on Facebook or Instagram, or just give us a call, the number 800-399-3566. That's to call this show. That's 800-399-3566. And on the line with us now is Maine Basketball Hall of Famer Andy Bedard. He was a standout at Mountain Valley High School in Rumford, played 2 years at Maine, and is a former coach of the now NBA rookie star Cooper Flagg. Andy, welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, and I'll let any of the panel, if they have a question for you as well. There are a lot of highlights, I'm sure, in your career. Is there one that stands out, and I'm thinking of your high school career, as kind of a favorite memory or a moment?
Sure. For me personally, as a player, it would have to be our state championship run in 1994. So it was a really special team that had a lot of support from our community and across the state, and used to sell out a lot of gyms, and just that special run and winning a state championship, and you know, playing with the guys that I had grown up with playing my entire life, and kind of ending that chapter of my high school career with them, going out with a gold ball, was something I probably didn't appreciate at the time, because you're just kind of in the middle of it. But looking back, it's just a really special moment. And to this day, I still talk to a lot of my teammates about that run and about that journey and all the stories we had along the way.
I'm just wondering how you were, the attention that you got as a standout player in a relatively small place. Were you kind of like a local celebrity during that run?
I probably a little bit. You know, and our entire team probably had that status. It's as many people know, Rumford is a mill town that has a lot of pride and takes their varsity high school sports seriously, especially with football and basketball. So it kind of has a unique following, where the town would kind of shut down, you know, when the varsity team was playing, and the whole town would show up and support us. So I think at some level, yeah, it was you kind of felt special, and the town made you feel special. And when you were playing hard and putting it all out on the floor, they certainly were behind you, being, you know, a blue collar town like that. So I think at some level, we probably were looked up to in the town for sure.
So everyone's talking about Cooper Flagg, obviously, and you had the You coached him at some point. How old was he when you were coaching him?
I started coaching Cooper probably 9 or 10 years old. My son's his best friend, and I was coaching a few guards from the Portland area, and I went to college at the University of Maine with Cooper's mom at the time, and we hadn't reconnected in a long time, and started kind of get to the level where we. Sorry, it's got to the level where we probably third and fourth grade, we kind of got all together and started playing, and kind of figured that we had something unique and a unique group of players and parents that kind of all were bought into the same sort of coaching style and effort and commitment. So, like probably 9, 10 years old.
Yeah. Bill, did you want to ask a question?
Oh, yeah. Well, Andy, I was watching the Dallas Celtics game the other night, and Scalabrine was talking about when you, Brian Scalabrine, who's the announcer of the Celtics game, a former NBA player, he was talking about you by name. Andy Bedard brought this kid down and said this kid could play. Tell me about taking Cooper down to the Scalabrine camp and him trying to make calls. A little bit about that, about how a kid from Maine, you're from Maine, stepped down to the court down.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. So Scal, we're kind of really close with Scal. We have been for years. He would come in and kind of like work out with Maine United, our AAU team. And we were big on, you know, letting the kids hear other voices and other perspectives, because a good coach knows that he doesn't know everything. So bringing in other former players. And Scal had a unique relationship with Matt McKenzie, who's Cooper's trainer up in Bangor. And kind of, we all kind of connected that way. And, you know, I think Cat Scal had worked him out a couple times and our team out a couple times, and invited Cooper down to play, you know, with some grown men, some college players, and some former pros. I think Cooper was 15 at the time. And I think the mindset was, you know, that, you know, pretty talented player, but there's a big difference between a 15-year-old and, you know, a 22-year-old, somebody that's, you know, back home from the summertime from playing overseas. And, you know, Cooper did what Cooper does. I mean, he didn't faze him who was out there. He dominated the floor, you know, pinning shots on the glass. And basically, to the point where it's rare, you usually hear like a loud roar from the people on the side watching a kid go off like that. But it was actually, you know, complete silence. I think people's jaw just dropped. They didn't know what to say, seeing this kid move and play at 15. So So that kind of you know, created that story with Scal and Cooper, and you know, obviously his Rolodex is a little deeper in the basketball world than a lot of ours is back in Maine. So I think he put a few phone calls out to different USA Basketball and different coaches, but you know, Cooper was on a lot of people's radar already at the time. So he was just such a unique, special player at such a young age that he started to grow that calling at, you know, probably from 13 years old.
Yeah. Andy, how much of that Father Kelly being a great player, his father Ralph saying, "I got size 15 boots," how much of it is Cooper's own innate intelligence about the game, and how much is the coaching and training that he's had coming up? How did Cooper become Cooper in your eyes?
I mean, I think it starts with just his physical gifts. I mean, we would all love to be 6'9" with a 7'2" wingspan. So obviously, you know, God has a lot to do with his body and his size. And I say it all the time that he was born to play this game. But then I think you have to have a little luck and some great guidance and great people around you, because I think it's easy to get lost in the shuffle and hear what you want to hear and maybe don't hear what you need to hear. And Cooper's very fortunate in that way, and he'll tell you the same thing if you have had a chance to talk with him, how blessed he was to, from his grandparents to his parents, to understanding he was something special, but also really trying to find things for him to work on and telling him what he needs to hear. So we kind of kept this bubble around him for a long time to not listen to the outside noise and to play the game the right way. I mean, I think we've all heard the stories of, you know, him following the Larry Bird 86 Celtics and what that was. And if you had a chance to be part of that and watch that team back then, I mean, it's hard to argue that that was some of the best basketball ever played to this day. So he's kind of grown up with parents that love that team, grandparents that love that team, who appreciated the way that they played, the Celtics played, and how hard they played. So he kind of got that mentality from all of us, you know, just regardless of the score, how many you had. I mean, did your team win and did you make the right plays and are you playing hard? It was kind of the drumbeat that he's heard really since he started picking up a ball. And it just became part of his relationship with the game and how he approaches it and his mindset. So he's kind of been brainwashed into that sort of thinking, and he hasn't really let it affect him all the way up until, you know, last night or two nights ago, I guess, when he dropped 35 on the Celtics. I think we all kind of saw the hustle and desire, and it was a perfect, you know, game for the Celtics fan. I mean, our boy Hero goes off and the Celtics sneak out a win. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a few, including myself, who kept watching that game, kept visioning Cooper Flagg in a Celtics green uniform instead of a Mavericks uniform, but we shall see. Andy Bedard, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Andy Bedard, a former high school standout at Mountain Valley High in Rumford, former UMaine player and team captain, and a member of the Maine Basketball Hall of Fame. I don't mean to make this sound like a cynical question in any way, but why has it taken so long, do you think, to produce a Cooper Flagg? I mean, we've had a lot of good players coming out of Maine. Skip Chappelle, Cindy Blodgett, Nick Kaner, Medley, but nobody really at the level of Cooper Flagg. Is this just sort of the lottery we won? I mean, how would any of you answer that?
Well, I would say that, you know, Cooper is somewhat of a unicorn, and so it's not going to be fair to try to make any comparisons from him to anybody else. It's such a unique situation. But, you know, Maine basketball has a long history of producing quality basketball players. You mentioned a few, but a lot of times people measure how successful a basketball player is based on what level they play at the college level. So if how many Division I players has Maine produced? But if you look at it at D2 or D3 or NAIA, unfortunately, New England is filled with schools. Maine has been a long producer of great basketball players at those levels. It's just rare that we have a player that's, been able to get, make it all the way to the pinnacle, which would be the NBA. Maine is known as the cradle of coaches in the NBA. At one point we had six basketball coaches in the NBA out of 32 teams that were directly connected to the state of Maine. So we were known for a while for producing great coaches, but now Cooper is going to turn that page and hopefully open the door maybe for maybe more players.
I would argue that there's 45 states who haven't produced a Cooper Flag type player. the list he's on is really, really short. And I always thought to get the first NBA player, I always figured it would be like a Sam Hauser, like a guy who was in the G League for a little bit, worked his way up, could shoot lights out, be that sort of player. And, it turns out it's one of the five best basketball players in the world.
Yeah. I want to bring in Nick Godfrey now. I think he's here. Nick has been directing our TV tournament coverage for a while. We'll ask him exactly how here in a second. There he is. Hey, Nick, welcome.
How's it going? Thanks, Keith.
Yeah, so let's just start with your story. So you actually, before you got to Maine Public, you were an avid viewer, right? You used to watch the tournaments on television.
Yep, I can remember growing up, my father watching the Class C games out of Augusta, watching the Winthrops, the Lisbons playing, also cheering, I'm a Gardner boy, so if the Tigers were in it, definitely cheering there. And so it started watching as a fan on television. I got an opportunity in high school in 2004. The Tigers did make it to the tournament at the Bangor Auditorium. So I have about 30 seconds of spotlight time on that tape, which was a funny story because when I first started at Maine Public, one of the very first games that we started officially archiving is that 2004 game. So it's like number 3 out of our long list now. But so it got my drive into, I love sports broadcasting. And then when I went to the New England School of Communications, we partnered with Maine Public to help do the Bangor tournament and do the auditorium, the cross insurance. And we took that part. And thankfully that kind of, made a path for me to start employment here at Maine Public. And so I've been working on the tournament since 2008. And I started directing, producing more in a capacity role in 2015, and I've been running with it ever since. I'm, pretty happy to have that as part of my job.
Yeah, you make it look so easy, but of course, this is just probably one of the most difficult things that we do. I mean, doing live sports, but then trying to coordinate multiple games, different sites, it's pretty remarkable. Can you just talk us through a little bit?
Yeah. So, now that we do just the state finals game, so we're, on any given weekend, we're on the state finals weekend, that is, we're in three venues in a 36-hour window. So we team up with New England School of Communications. We have our truck. Like a perfect example, most years I will be in one venue on a Friday night, most likely Portland or Bangor. And then the following day, we're in Augusta or Portland, vice versa, how it falls. So, we're shifting crews hundreds of miles away in a short time turnaround. So, we're setting up all day Friday, doing the games Friday night, packing up, then rushing to a venue at 8 a.m. to make sure that we're on the air at 1 p.m. So, we're definitely, we have 2 to 3 trucks in the mix. Thanks for our partners. We have, various freelancers. It does, someone asked me what I thought about this. And, if you watch the, the March Madness and you see all these games in different venues in different states, multiple crews, multiple trucks, it's, it's our main version of doing that. And, very thankful to have a very good crew that will put in the time and the grind to make it happen.
And you're not only capturing the action here that Bill and I are both addicted to, but there's an archive, right? This is capturing the history of these moments for all of these kids and their families.
Yeah, no, it's, obviously, like I was just talking about, our archive that we started, we have film from prior to 2004, but we really have captured and documented every game since 2004 all the way up through, and having that on our system and our website and passport, here's a pledge pitch here, become a passport member, you can watch all those games on our archive. And to have those games and that history and those things documented, it's great. We talked to hearing about the Dexter teams and the Skank teams and the Central Roostic teams, like all these historic teams that we've had throughout the years, and have the documentation on that for anyone to kind of view is great. And so it's quite a bit of work. And like I said, I got to give a shout out to my my supervisor, boss, coworker, Nick Woodward, for, you know, having the mindset to saying this was a very important to do. And, you know, we've just been keeping it going ever since.
All right. Well, we'll keep our eyes and ears out for that coming up in just a little bit. Nick Godfrey, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
Nick Godfrey, the station's our television production coordinator. All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be back in a few minutes. This is Maine Calling.
Hello, happy Thursday. My name is Lucy Santerre. I'm joined by my colleague, Nicole Ogrisco, and we're just taking a couple of minutes in the middle of this really fun episode of Maine Calling to chat with you all who are tuning in, whether you're tuning in your car, on your break, or at your radio at home. This has been a great episode all about basketball in Maine. And if this is bringing you some delight, bringing you some information, why don't you give us a call at 1-800-866-1475, where you are able to donate to continue to make programs like this possible.
A lot of swapping stories happening during this particular episode, but also in the Portland studio where we have volunteers waiting to hear from you. A few of them have been, you know, this episode on Maine High School basketball has prompted conversations between a few of them. You know, others are thinking about, you know, I remember in my day when I used to attend high school basketball games, or if I, you know, was part of the championship. You know, episodes like these that are inspiring you and our listeners here, and it's only made possible because of your support. It's why we're coming to you now asking to pick up the phone if you haven't already. 1-800-866-1475 is that phone number. Again, volunteers are ready to hear from you. You can also visit mainpublic.org.
And you might have heard a note that our colleague Nick Godfrey was talking about, which is the amazing archive of basketball and other content available on PBS Passport. That is also a perk for people who become evergreen friends. That's someone who donates on a monthly basis. And special news for those who are thinking about becoming an evergreen friend for the first time today, or just donating for the first time today, there is a giveaway happening. So if you've been listening and you're wondering, should I call 1-800-866-1475? The answer is yes, because if you donate, you will be entered into a drawing to win one of six pairs of tickets to the sold-out Hidden Brain performance in Portland. Hidden Brain is a beloved radio show that you hear on Maine Public Radio with host John Kervodontum, and it gets you thinking about what's going on in your mind, and he's coming to Portland. So if you want a chance to see the show and you didn't get tickets, donate today at 1-800-866-1475, and you might just win.
And Lucy, I mean, you know, programs like Hidden Brain, like the one we're listening to now, Maine Calling, again, only made possible because of your support. Maine Public, we've always relied on listeners to power us through. We're doing so even more today, and we're counting on you to keep the tradition of these programs that you enjoy, Maine Calling, the others, Morning Edition, All Things Considered, alive today, well, into the future. 1-800-866-1475 is that phone number. You can also go to mainpublic.org.
And whether it's the first time you're donating or whether you're interested in increasing your sustaining membership, such as Jeff from Falmouth or Barbara Ann from Kennebunk or Suzanne from Cumberland Center, you can give us a call at 1-800-866-1475 and talk to our volunteers about what amount would be right for you and your family. That number is 1-800-866-1475, or you can visit us at mainpublic.org/donate.
We're about to head back into Maine Calling. I imagine more discussion, more memories coming back. Again, if you support this program because you rely on programs like these, please give us a call, 1-800-866-1475. You can also go to mainpublic.org/donate, and thank you.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Are you excited about the upcoming high school basketball playoffs? Well, my guests are, and I am, and many of you are, I'm sure, as well. Lucas McNally, self-described basketball data nerd, runs MaineBasketballRankings.com. Bill Green, former reporter, anchor, and executive producer with News Center Maine for more than 47 years. And Peter Murray, coach and former English teacher at Dexter Regional High School and current president of the Maine Association of Basketball Coaches. Share your comments and questions. Email talk@mainpublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. I have an email from Woody who writes, I had the pleasure of being a long-term sub teaching at Valley High in Bingham when they had a championship women's basketball team. I can't remember if it was Western Maine or the state championship, but they live and breathe basketball in Bingham. It's part of the culture, starting when students are quite young, often mentored by the high school players, which is what we talked about a little bit earlier. I want to look forward, talk about how the game might develop from here on out. I can remember, to start this section, playing in pretty rustic gyms. We would play Rockland in middle school, and the out of bounds was the wall. So you had to put your foot against the wall to bring the ball in. In Appleton, there were like support beams of some sort over the foul line, so you had to change the arc of your free throw. I mean, there's many stories about this. We've moved on from there, and there are some, Lucas, I'm going to turn to you, suggestion that we might update the game itself in some ways. And I think you had made a point in your notes that we might be, our version of the game might not be as up to date as it might be.
Right. Well, you're talking, I'm assuming, about shot clocks, which are inevitable. It's, you know, you get into the tournament and a team will be up 7 with a minute and a half left, and they're just going to take the air out of the ball. And it's they've changed the foul rules, which makes it, and took away the 1-on-1, which makes it a lot harder for teams to foul and come back, because you don't have the missing the front end of the 1-on-1, which I always thought was one of the best plays in basketball in terms of drama. You know, if you got that, you know, key situation and you miss that front end and the other team gets the ball and all that. So, I mean, shot clocks are coming. It's just a question of when and not if. And I think it'll improve the game. It'll improve the pace of the game. And, you know, a couple years ago, they tried it at the Civic Center in a Christmas tournament, and the players adapted almost instantly. The adults had a little more trouble figuring out the nuances of the rule of, like, you know, the ball would go out of bounds or whatever. They're like, oh, do we reset the shot clock? Things like that. But I think it's going to come, and I think it'll be a net positive, and I think it'll probably come sooner than some people think.
Let's bring in Peter. What's your thought? You play the coach role, and you're, by the way, we should mention that you are the next incoming president of a pretty big organization. Can you just mention that?
Well, in addition to my duties as the president of the Maine Association of Basketball Coaches, I'm also the vice president currently of the National High School Basketball Coaches Association, and will become the president of that group in July of this summer. So I have an opportunity once a summer, every July we meet, and I sit in a room with as many as 36 states represented and have a chance to talk about basketball across the country. And I agree with Lucas that the shot clock is something that comes up every year, and it is eventually going to be here. Right now in the state of Maine, it's what I'd call a big school versus a small school issue. Big schools want it and small schools tend to not want it. And I say that only because small schools, for them, it's a financial reason. That's really about the only thing that kind of holds people back. They're a little nervous about that. Some small schools are struggling to find somebody to run the regular clock. Now they're going to have to find another person to run the shot clock. So you have those kinds of concerns. Another rule that's being talked about right now is a restricted area underneath the basket. We don't have that in Maine high school basketball. A point of emphasis this year is on flopping. Where defensive players throw themselves to the floor, or offensive players act as if they're being mugged when they're barely being touched. Trying to get that acting piece of basketball out of the game. So I think the biggest changes you're going to see in basketball is rule related. I mean, I think we can all agree that when we put a 3-point line on a basketball court, it changed the game, and not just in Maine, but around the world. But we adapted to it, and now I'm sure the, you know, generations of people, they can't imagine the game without a three-point line. You know, some of these players that we've talked about, imagine what they could have done if there had been a three-point line available to them back in those days.
Peter, how close is the restricted circle? Because that's sort of been one of my, like, talking points for a while of, like, if we're concerned about safety, which is why we got rid of the one-on-one, I mean, the restricted circle is the easiest fix in the world. It's like half a can of paint.
Exactly. And I know that it's bubbling at the coach level. And what ends up happening is I, as a representative of the Coaches Association, also am on the Maine Basketball Commission. And so I deal with the MPA, and that's where it'll get brought up. If the coaches support that and want that, we'll make that known. And as you say, I mean, the shot clock has a financial component to it. Even though I don't think it's nearly as much as people think, pretty easy to do, I think. I believe there are 32 out of 50 states in the United States that have a shot clock. Mm-hmm. Just 5 years ago, it was only 22. So it's increased by 10 just in the last 5 or 6 years. So it's heading to Maine. It'll get here eventually. But like a lot of things, you know, culturally, we bring up the rear. It gets here late.
I have a running joke that if for the shot clock, if we just said, look, the shot clock's going to be on for the tournament games, and if you want it on during the regular season, that's great, but it's going to be on for the tournament games, that there would be a lot of schools who would very, very quickly find the money.
Well, and I can, you're absolutely on point there, because it was suggested at one point that it'd only be used in the tournament, and instantly people were opposed to that. Either you're going to have it or you're not going to have it, one or the other. But I will tell you that all three venues that are used for the tournament, all four venues, all are equipped for it right now.
All right. Sorry, we're sort of out of time, Bill. I'm sorry, but I do want to finish here. I do want to read a little bit of a note, an email from our board operator's mom, Missy Belanger Tracy, and she writes, two best memories, putting a face-up penny under the auditorium floor under each chair for luck. No losses 2 years in a row, Caribou Girls, 83-84. Second best, seeing everyone come out of their house from Holton, Mars Hill, all the way to Caribou cheering us as we rode on the bus. Strong sense of county togetherness. Thank you for showing these games on TV. It's a wonderful contribution for folks unable to travel, Missy Belanger Tracy. Well, nice memory to end on. And I'd like to thank my panel of guests here today. Bill Green, former host of Bill Green's Maine. Peter Murray, president of the Maine Association of Basketball Coaches, and Lucas McNally, who runs MaineBasketballRankings.com. Today's sound engineer, Sam Tracy. Tomorrow's Maine Calling program is all about the Declaration of Independence, an important document in our history. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
And this is listener-supported Maine Public Radio and day two of our winter fundraiser. Good morning, not for so much longer. My name is Nicola Grisco. I'm a reporter and host here at Maine Public with my colleague Lucy Santerre, taking just a couple minutes of your time to ask for your support today. Because you rely on programs like Maine Calling, others that you might hear throughout the day, we're asking you to pick up the phone, 1-800-866-1475. You can also go to mainpublic.org.
That's right. Hello, everyone who's tuning in. Can I just say that I love pledge drives because we feel the love from all of you. Hearing the phone ring in our Portland studio is a sign that one of you is calling in, and it just creates such an amazing vibe. So if you're all about putting that energy into the world and supporting public media, what's better than that? Call us today at 1-800-866-1475, and you will be contributing to what makes everything that we do possible. And like Nicole said, there's a variety of programming on Maine Public Radio, on Maine Public Television, and coming from our national and regional partners. I like to use the phrase the public media multiverse, because though it is complex, it is all connected. And the good news is it's all accessible and free to the general public. You can tune into the radio anytime. But how does that happen? What makes that possible? Supporters and listeners like you. Call us today at 1-800-866-1475 to help make this public media programming possible.
Yeah, Lucy, and even just to put together an hour-long show a day like Maine Calling, I mean, it takes a lot of work. You know, there's multiple producers suggesting ideas. I'm always amazed with the variety of ideas that they come up with for Maine Calling episodes, you know, including the one that we just heard today. But again, that all takes resources. For us as reporters here, it's a big state. It takes resources, time, gas money to drive to different parts of this great state. We have towers throughout the state of Maine as well. And that all takes resources to monitor and make sure those are working as well as they can be. That's why we come to you a few times a year asking for your support. And now is no better time to pick up the phone. 1-800-866-1475 or to mainepublic.org.
And we have a very special offer for people who are donating to Maine Public for the first time. If you are someone who tunes into Maine Public Radio, you've probably heard of this pretty cool show called Hidden Brain. It's been around for 10 years, and as part of the, I think it's like the 10-year anniversary tour, Shankar Vedantam, the host, is coming to the State Theater in Portland. But hold on a second, that show is sold out. I know, big sad. You might have heard about
that.
It's
a hot ticket.
It is a hot ticket. But right now, Maine Public has a little bit of magic up our sleeves. We are doing a drawing of everyone who donates for the first time today for a chance to win one of six pairs of tickets to this show. So if you love Hidden Brain, if you didn't get a ticket, and if you're ready to donate to Maine Public, do it now. Do it now, because if you call 1-800-866-1475, you could win one of those Hidden Brain pairs of tickets. So, you know, think of all of the amazing programs that you love from Maine Public and, you know, find an amount that works for you. Any amount is great. Some people start off with $50 a month. Other people make a one-time donation. Call us at 1-800-866-1475 and, you know, maybe say a note about what you love. Talk to our volunteers.
Yeah, Lucy, we've also heard from people who have called in and they have increased their sustaining membership to Maine Public. Juliet from Falmouth, Brenda from Portland, both increased their current sustaining contributions to this nonprofit statewide news service. Thanks to Juliet and Brenda, we're hoping you will be the next call today. 1-800-866-1475 or at mainepublic.org.
And, you know, visiting us at mainepublic.org is a great option because we have an easy-to-find donate button right on the top of our page. And when you go to our website, you can also explore all of the other amazing programs, all of that local news that Nicole was talking about on our homepage. There's so much work that goes into everything that we do. And as a reminder, you are what makes that possible, because you are the people in the community who are setting aside amounts of money that work for you in order to provide public broadcasting for the entire state. That includes PBS Kids, that includes, you know, all of the television programs 24/7 across four channels. There's Maine Public Classical and Maine Public Radio. So your call to 1-800-866-1475 is what makes that possible.